Introduction of the speaker. It's my job or task to find speakers this month. And the lady I've asked to come out and share is somebody I met many years ago. And she's been sober since then, which is absolutely great. I haven't heard her in a long time. Will you please help me welcome Sandy?
Hi everyone, my name is Sandy, I'm an alcoholic. And it was actually quite interesting driving down here. I don't do downtown meetings very much anymore. I live out on the West Island, it's just easier to go out there. But when I first got sober, it was downtown meetings and NDG meetings that I went to. And this was actually the first meeting that I came to, Sunday Nighters, for me, which I'll explain a little bit more a little later on. But coming here was really an interesting experience, just remembering what it was like that first night that I came up here and I came up those stairs. I also got a little lost. I turned down the wrong street, which I do a lot. And I drove by, I don't even remember for sure, which is probably a good thing, the bar where I had my last drink. So it's really quite interesting. But they say I should start at the beginning and say a little bit about what it used to be like, what it's like now, and how I got here. So that's what I'm going to try and do. I always like to mention that I'm nervous speaking. I don't know why, because if you know me personally, you know I love to talk. But talking up here is, I don't know, a little nerve-wracking. And I still haven't gotten a handle on that. It's just the way it is for me. Maybe it's because I come from a family that doesn't really promote talking about feelings. I come from an alcoholic family. My dad is an alcoholic. My mother was a codependent, and they were very involved in that relationship. My earliest memories are of feeling different, of feeling that there was something wrong that no one would talk about. I remember asking my mom, like, what's wrong with Dad? She'd go, nothing. And I'd go, like, okay, if you say so. I also remember, like I said, always feeling different, feeling not comfortable in my own skin, feeling a lot of pressure to be something that I knew I wasn't capable of being. I always felt that I wasn't good enough. I always felt that I had to try harder to be better, to be something that I wasn't. I don't necessarily believe anymore that that's because I come from an alcoholic family. I honestly think it's an innate trait because I still suffer from a lot of those same feelings. I just deal with them hopefully a little bit better than I used to back then. But back then I had no one to talk to about any of these feelings. I didn't even know what they were. I couldn't even identify them. I just know that I felt wrong. I don't know how else to explain it. As my dad's drinking progressed, our family life got a little bit more out of control, and my feelings of feeling wrong, I guess, got a little bit more intensified, because like I said, I just couldn't handle what was going on around me. One of my major character defects is I'm a caretaker, and I was really trying to take care of my family. I was really trying to take care of my dad, who was drinking, my mother, who wasn't coping well with it, and my younger sister. And as my family fell apart, and I realized I wasn't going to be able to do any of that, my feelings of guilt and not being good enough got even worse. When I was 13, I guess about 13, my dad left as a direct result of his alcoholism. And within 6 months, I was drinking. I didn't see the connection at the time, but I do now. Because those, in my mind, I honestly believe I'm one of those people that believe that alcoholism is a disease of perception. Because if you talk to my sister, it's where we grew up in different households. And she's not lying. It took me a while to figure that out. And I'm not lying. But in my mind, when my dad left, all the responsibilities for the family fell on my shoulders. I was 13 years old, and I felt responsible for my mother, and I felt responsible for my baby sister, and I knew I couldn't do it. So within 6 months, I was drinking. And in my mind, I honestly believe that, drinking saved my life at the time. I was really not doing well emotionally. I was suicidal. I don't ever remember not being suicidal, actually, even as a quite a young child. I might not have understood all the ramifications, but I always thought if things got too bad, I could just check out. And those feelings were getting worse and worse, and then I had my first drink. I've heard a couple of speakers talk about you can tell an alcoholic because I remember their first drink like it's a religious experience, and that's the way it is with me. It was wonderful, wonderful. Went to high school dance. I've always been insecure from all those feelings I grew up with. I've always felt out of place in groups. It's probably why I don't like being up in front of the room as well. And I went to a high school dance. A bunch of us went to a guy's house first, and we drank jungle juice. You know, we stole from his parents, and we drank a little bit of. And I found out some really, really important lessons that night. One of them was I'm good at drinking. There was four of us, and I could outdrink all three of them. They were wusses, man. They just couldn't keep up. The other thing I found out is I understood why my dad did what he did, because I didn't get it. You know, my dad's a really good man, but when he drank, he was a bit of an ass. And I never understood why he picked alcohol over his family until I had my first drink. And then I couldn't understand why my mother was being so unreasonable to deny my poor father the privilege of this wonderful elixir. And I found out that I could be free of my fears, because that's what alcohol did for me. I didn't care if you liked me, which was a novel experience for me. I didn't care about anything, actually. I didn't care. I didn't feel responsible for anyone, including myself, which was kind of neat. We went to a high school dance, and some guy asked me to dance, and some girl threatened to beat me up because that guy asked me to dance, and I had never gotten so much attention in all my life, and as far as I was I considered I had arrived. I thought, this is cool. I want to do this again. And I drank at every opportunity after that, but like I said, I was 13. It was sometimes hard to get my hands on alcohol, but when I did, I drank to excess. I never drank socially. I know some people do, and then it progresses, and then they start drinking alcoholically. I drank alcoholically that first night. I had, I don't know what you want to call them, gray outs, brown outs. They weren't complete blackouts, but I remember point A and point B, and I don't remember how I got from point A to point B. I also never drank alcohol because I wanted to enjoy the taste of alcohol. I drank alcohol to get drunk. I thought that's what the purpose was. You know, I don't understand having a couple of drinks. I still don't. My mother drives me crazy. She'll forget she has a drink going. And not me. Why I drank was to feel normal, to feel like I don't care what other people, you know, think about me, and to have fun. And the only way I knew how to have fun and to let some of that pressure off, that steam off, to feel comfortable at all, was to get loaded. So I did that as often as I could. I also did drugs, especially in the early years, because a drug dealer never asked for my ID, and sometimes getting alcohol was a little bit difficult, but alcohol was what I wanted. That was my drug of choice. I really am nervous. Okay, let's stop and breathe. That's always a good thing, eh? I talk really fast when I'm nervous. Hopefully you can keep up. Okay, in the meanwhile, my dad, who got kicked out because of his drinking, found AA and started getting sober. He had a couple of slips for a while, but he eventually settled down and he eventually got sober. My baby sister, who's 2 years younger than me, is also an alcoholic, and her drinking is quite a bit different than mine. Mine's a very much more hidden drinking because I was still trying to be that good girl. My sister was out in your face, here I am, alcoholic, get out of my way. And she soon found her way to AA and got sober. So now I'm surrounded. My dad's in AA, my sister's in AA, and I'm still trying to be that good girl. I'm still trying to be that, whatever role it was, good sister, good daughter, good student, good friend, good girlfriend. I'm not very good at that. I was still trying to hide my drinking. And it was getting more difficult. My dad might not have seen my drinking, but my sister knew that my drinking was out of hand. And like I said, she had found AA. And she's a very, very clever girl, my sister. If she had said to me, do you think you might have a problem with drinking? I would have told her to get lost, and I'd probably still be out there. But what she said was, I'm really having a hard time today, and I'd really appreciate if you come to the meeting with me because I'm feeling a little vulnerable. 3 years sober, she was still feeling vulnerable, and I was still going to meetings with her. I'm a little slow. She also was dragging me to AA events, AA dances, and stuff like that. And I remember clearly I would be out drinking on a Friday night in a blackout, and on a Saturday night I'd be at an AA dance. So when I talk about schizophrenic alcoholic lifestyles, I was really leading one. It was really very bizarre. But in my mind, my drinking was not like my father's. My drinking was not like my sister's, and I used every excuse in the book to explain why I wasn't an alcoholic. I had rules and regulations, so I'll give you a couple of examples. Because I'd read those questions early on, those 20 questions, I thought the questions were wrong, because if the questions were right, everyone I knew was an alcoholic. Everyone I knew was an alcoholic. Or at least a heavy drinker, because I didn't really hang around with people unless they were heavy drinkers. Everyone else was boring, so. Like I said, now I've gotten completely lost. That's good. Yeah, so I always had these excuses of why I wasn't an alcoholic. One of them was I wouldn't drink in the morning. Thank you. But I'm a nurse. I took this being taking care of people, you know, like to that next level. I actually decided I'd get paid for it. But I worked shift work. So I would get up out of bed at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and I would have a drink at 6. And I didn't think that that was drinking in the morning. If you've only been out of bed an hour, it's drinking in the morning. I think I was 3 years sober before I figured that one out. I also used to do drugs in the morning, but that didn't count because that just made the cartoons funnier, right? That didn't count. And I had a lot of rules and regulations that I would try and follow. And of course, as my drinking progressed, I didn't follow them very well. I did a lot of things. I thought, I'll never do this, and then I'd do that. And I'd go, okay, well, at least I won't do this. And like I said, I was a blackout drinker, so it was really hard to try and keep these controls on. So what I ended up doing was moving to L.A. because the problem was my family. If you had my family, you'd drink too. The problem was Montreal. The problem was my job. The problem was the current boyfriend I had. There was always something. And if I just moved, I would be fine. So I went to Los Angeles, where if you're a blackout drinker, it's really not a very good city to be in. You know, Montreal's not necessarily safe. L.A. was really, I don't know how I survived. I don't know how I wasn't killed, honestly. I also had a bad habit in bars of trying to break up fights because I'm a nurse and I don't like seeing people injured. I'd be drunk and stepping between two guys fighting because I didn't want them to fight. Like I said, I don't know how I didn't get killed. So I came back home because the problem was L.A., because L.A. was too dangerous a city. And I always had all these excuses, like I said. So when I came home, my sister was coming, must have been about 2 years sober at that point, and she must have sensed that I was really starting to fall apart. She started dragging me to more AA events. And my bottom was really, I had many bottoms. And I would scare myself and I would control my drinking for a while. I would prove to myself I couldn't be an alcoholic by going out and only having maybe two or three drinks that one night. I don't have to do that for one night, which would allow me to drink for months on end. But because I could do it for that one night, it would prove to me that I wasn't an alcoholic. Or I'd go out and have like six or seven drinks, but not go into a blackout. So that must mean I'm not an alcoholic. I always had all these built-in things to prove to myself that I wasn't. Because the truth of the matter was, alcohol was my just reward. I felt I deserved it. It was my best friend. It was my lover. It was my higher power. I've never, to this day, loved anything quite as much as I loved alcohol. And I didn't want to give it up. And I knew if I looked at my drinking, that there was a possibility, if I wanted to live, that I was going to have to give it up. So I wouldn't look at that. It was always something else that was the problem. Things started getting worse, though. The blackout started getting worse. The situation started getting worse. Like I said, I went into nursing. I was now working in an intensive care unit. And I was having a really hard time living with what was happening. Because Friday night, I'd be out drinking and driving. And Saturday night, I'd be taking care of a victim of a drunk driver. And that was hard. That was really hard to live with that, because I knew that that could have been me that could have done that. So I did the responsible thing. I got rid of my car. It never dawned on me that social drinkers don't have to get rid of their cars to avoid drinking and driving. I never really, just never did. I just thought, I can't mix drinking and driving, so I know I'm not going to stop drinking, so therefore let's get rid of a car. Never dawned on me that might be some kind of warning sign, that the average Joe that doesn't have a problem with alcohol don't have to make these decisions. I was just proud of myself that I was being responsible. I'm telling you. When I was 18, I tried to commit suicide by overdosing, and I made a promise to myself and my family that I would never try doing that again. And I was starting to doubt whether I was going to be able to keep that promise. I was starting to really fall apart emotionally. I just didn't know what was going on. I still couldn't look at the alcohol. I just knew that if I didn't do something, I was going to die. Or even worse, I was going to live. And I was going to live with this loneliness and these feelings of despair and these feelings of that nothing's ever going to get any better. And is this all that life has to offer? I don't even know how to explain it. It was horrid. So I'll tell you about my last drunk. If I had known it was going to be my last drunk, I would have done more with it, but I didn't know. It wasn't very exciting. But a couple of things happened that were a little different. So I was drinking with a new group of people, and I didn't want them to know how much I was drinking. So I drank before I went out, and I was sneaking drinks in between rounds because they were drinking too slow. And I couldn't get drunk. My body got drunk, but my mind didn't. And oh, what a horrible feeling that is. No matter how much I drank, I couldn't stop that thing in my head that used to go, you know. And I kept on drinking and I kept on drinking and it just wouldn't stop. And I had, I guess, a bit of a moment of clarity where I looked around the room and I understood that this is what my life had become. I was in a room full of people that didn't know me, that I didn't know them. That they didn't really care for me and I didn't really care for them. The only thing that we had in common was this liquid that I was holding in my glass. And I understood just how desperately lonely I had become. And how small my life had become. And I knew that if I didn't do something, again, didn't want to think it was alcohol, but I had to do something, and I didn't know what it was. So I went home. I woke up the next day, and I called my sister. I guess down deep, I knew what I had to do. Denial was a powerful, powerful, powerful thing. At least it was in my life, especially at the beginning of my sobriety and before, just before I stopped. And I called her, and she dragged me to an AA event, which I didn't want to go to. It was actually a brunch at Sandy's place, so I've known him since the first day that I came in. And everyone was sober and laughing and happy and joyous and free and annoying. Mm-hmm. And here I was hungover. I'm sure I must have stunk of alcohol. I'm sure it must have just been coming out of my pores, but I didn't think anybody knew, right? Right. And like I said, I knew something had to change. I just didn't know what it was, but I knew something had to change. And at that time, it was a Sunday. They used to go out and play ball every Sunday in NDG Park. And so they dragged me out there. They stuck me in left field. I swear to God, this is true. It was May. It was hot. The sun was beating down on me. And like I said, I'm hungover. And by this point, my hangovers are really pretty nasty. I used to pride myself at the beginning that I didn't get bad hangovers, but I more than made up for it at the end. And I'm out in left field, and this feeling comes over me of, again, even God is smart. If God had said to me, well, he didn't actually talk to me, you'll be happy to know, but if it had been put in a way that you are an alcoholic, I would have said F you, and it would have gone my way. But this feeling of peace came over me, which really confused me because I hadn't felt like that in a long time, and this feeling of, these are your people. There is a connection here. You belong here. Those kinds of feelings came over me, and I hadn't felt that way in a really, really long time. So I went over to my sister, and I told her I wanted to join AA, and she cried, and I cried. I'm sure she must have been having, like, prayer vigils. Oh, please let my sister see the light. And we went back to my place, a bunch of members, and we all sat around and talked, and then Diane, that's my sister, said, okay, we got to go to a meeting. And I was like, she goes, that's kind of the way it works. You join AA, you go to meetings. They kind of go together. Oh, I didn't want to come. And I came to this meeting. Now, like I said, I had been to many meetings with my sister. I had been to many meetings with my father, always as a guest. But this was my first meeting because I had a desire to stop drinking. I also want to tell you how important that tradition is for me. Because if you had said to me that I had to admit I was an alcoholic before I could come to AA, I wouldn't have come. But the only requirement for membership is a desire to stop drinking. And I had that. Finally, I had that. I was willing to give up anything. I was willing to try anything. Because I was really afraid I was going to live the rest of my life with this feelings of loneliness and despair, and I knew something had to change. And I was willing to try giving up alcohol. And for me, that was a really, really big deal. My sister knows me very well, and she was able to put it in a way that made sense to me. And what she said was, if you're not an alcoholic, what's the big deal giving up booze? I don't know. So why don't you try AA for 3 months, and if at the end of 3 months you feel like you don't want to stay, you can go back out and we'll refund your misery with interest. And I felt like she had hit me on the head with this big giant hammer here. I had no argument. I had no argument. So I started coming to me. I took time off work because I was in that bad shape, actually. And there weren't a lot of rehabs back then, or at least I didn't know of any, so I just did it myself. That was the other thing. I thought I was only one of these kind of maybe high bottoms. You know, like I didn't really drink that much. I went through withdrawal. I was probably drinking a little bit more than I had admitted to because you don't go through withdrawal if you're not drinking on a regular basis. So, like I said, even at that point, I was still making excuses for myself. Yeah, but. I was very good at that. But I decided to try AA. I was that desperate. I was that lonely. I'll try. So I jumped in with both feet, as I usually do with anything, and being obsessive compulsive can sometimes be a good thing, and it actually really helped me in early sobriety. I went to 2 meetings a day, 3 if I could. I think I joined 5 groups that first little while. 2 of them were on a Monday. That was complicated. I joined all kinds of service because I didn't know I was allowed to say no. No one told me that. So I just was involved in all kinds of committees and all kinds of things, and I was really fortunate, actually. It saved my life. As well, I was really fortunate that my sister was able to plump me in this group of people and then take a step back and allow me to find my way. My first real home group, once I had settled a little bit, was Sobriety and Beyond. It was a young people's group. I was 26 when I got sober. My sister was only 21 or 22 when she got sober. So we were young, and we used to hang out, and we used to do the craziest, wildest things. Sober, though. I remember driving down to Battleboro, Vermont for a dance. I came home the next day at about 2 in the afternoon. Hadn't drank, but boy, did I feel hungover. Coming over the bridge with the sun coming up, I said, oh, man, are you sure this is sober? But we had fun. And like I said, I got involved in service. I got involved in ICIPA, the International Conference of Young People in AA. And my whole life became AA. And before I was 3 months sober, I knew I was an alcoholic. Wasn't happy about it, but I knew it. And I remember, actually, we used to have Dr. Bob's Hop, and my 3 months sobriety fell on the Dr. Bob's Hop, which was a dance. And I told everybody in that room that I was 3 months sober. I was so excited. I was so filled with enthusiasm for life, something I hadn't had in a really, really long time. Karen, and we were talking before the meeting, I'm pretty sure she was at, if not my first meeting, then my first week or so of meetings. She was saying that she remembers me talking early in sobriety, saying that if you had asked me what I wanted at my first meeting, and I had told you, I would have sold myself short, because I had no idea what this experience of sobriety was going to give me. It's literally beyond my wildest dreams. Things haven't turned out the way that I thought they would. In a lot of ways, they've turned out better, which is really hard for me to say because I'm really struggling right now, but I'll get into that in a couple minutes. Like I said, I did what I was told to do, which, again, is something new for me. I joined a home group. I got a sponsor. I started working my steps. We went to Salt Lake City to bid for the Montreal bid for Iggy Pop, and that's where I got my year. It was in Salt Lake. I'd never really gotten out of Montreal except for L.A., and here I am doing all this traveling and sobriety. It was just amazing. And so I'm in Salt Lake City, and we're doing the bid, and you got to understand, there's like about 5,000 or 6,000 young people in AA partying in this hotel down there. It was just amazing. Who knew you could party sober? And I didn't know that. And it was Saturday, and my sobriety date was a Sunday. And Bill, a good friend of ours, realized that with the time difference, it was 10 o'clock there, and it was midnight back here, so it was my sobriety date. So he went up to the front of the room, and he announced my year's sobriety. And thousands of people got up and cheered and screamed and yelled. But you got to remember, I'm that scared little girl that feels like no one loves me. That night alone kept me sober for a really long time, because I felt that love in the room. I felt that bond that we all shared. I felt that I felt love, probably for once of the first times in my life, and I was so excited. And that's what I'm saying. AA has given me so much more than I could possibly ever even imagine. That doesn't mean it's always been easy. It hasn't. I live a very interesting life. I have a couple of friends that aren't in AA, and I try to explain my life to them, and they just get this, like, what? You know? Like, what? I must admit, I'm not bored. When I got sober, one of my biggest concerns was that I'd be bored. I've been many things in recovery. Bored has never been one of them. Never. I'd like to order some boredom in, please. I'd like to have like a week of boredom delivered to my house, and it just never comes. I'm going through a second failed marriage in recovery. It's something I'm not very good at, relationships. So joking around saying, you know, there's answers to everything that you want to know in there. Do they have one on going through relationships? No, I didn't think so. And it's been really tough. It's been really, really, really tough. I know with my first ex-husband, I feel like I should belong in Hollywood now, right? I think it's important that I talk about this a little bit because I drifted away from AA with him. He was an AA member. And in my opinion, we became each other's higher powers. And we used to sit in the back of the room, and on the way home, we would criticize all the speakers. What was he thinking? Did you see what she was wearing? It was not recovery. And when that marriage failed, I had nothing. I had no home group because I had gotten a resentment and had stopped going to that home group and had not replaced it. I didn't have a sponsor because she had moved and I hadn't replaced her. I didn't really have a support group because he was my support group. And when he left, I really... this close to drinking. I don't really know how I didn't. I came to that fork in the road where this was drinking and this wasn't, and I was halfway down that road. And I don't know what you want to call it, God's grace. I have no idea what you want to call it, but I came back and I recommitted to AA, and I have never gone without a home group or a sponsor since that time. Not saying I always do my program well, because I'm one of these people that when things are going bad, I know what to do, but when things are going well, I have a tendency to kind of slip away. I'm too tired. Go to a meeting tomorrow. They don't need me. I need you. You know, I forget that sometimes, eh? And like I said, I've had a lot of ups and downs. My dad, who stayed sober as well, got very sick in recovery and got cancer. And within 6 months of diagnosis, he died. And he was only 59. And that was really, really, really hard. But the good part of that was that me and my dad in that last 6 months really got to know each other. It was sad that it took that. To get past some of the bullshit, because we had stuff from the past we had to deal with. And we both were able to make amends to each other. And when he died, I was holding his hand. And I know 1,000% that he knows that I loved him, and I know that he loved me. And you know what? If it wasn't for AA, I wouldn't have had that. We would have never found our way to each other. when he was dying, I would have been sitting in a bar complaining to other people about how difficult it was that my father was dying. I would have left him alone because I would have been too selfish and self-centered to have the kind of... It's difficult to watch someone you love die. But it's also really beautiful, which I know sounds really bizarre, but it is a very amazing time. Difficult but amazing. And I'm just so grateful that AA showed me how to do that, showed me how to be a daughter, to really be a daughter. And for that, I'm so grateful. It's funny, where I move to now, I pass by the cemetery where he's buried every day, so I talk to him every day. As I go by, hi, Dad. You know, when other people in the car forget sometimes, I'm like, what the? Oh, my dad, you know. So now people who know me are in the car, but we all say hi to my father as we go by. I'm just going to talk a little bit about what I'm going through right now, and then I'll stop. Like I said, I do have a home group. It's Step Sisters. It's a women's step meeting. If you want, any of the women want to know more about it, please talk to me afterwards. I go to women's intensives twice a year at least. I'm very connected with my sponsor. I need to be right now. I'm going to the World Conference with my sponsor, which I'm really excited about, and I don't have the money to do, but oh well, that's another story I could give. I'm not good with money. But what I'm going through right now is, I face difficulties when it comes to relationships. And the man I married the second time, also an alcoholic, after being sober for quite a few years, went back to drinking. And I've been watching that the last 2 years, him getting sober for a little while and going back to drinking, getting sober and going back to drinking. And finally, after a couple of breakups, this is it now. He doesn't think so. He thinks he's going to get it again and that we're going to get back together again, but we're not. He came to the house today to pick up some of his stuff, and he's drinking again. And if I ever doubted how powerful and cunning alcohol is, all I have to do is look at him. Because he's dying, and I know he is. And there's absolutely nothing I can do about it. I pray like hell for him. I still love him. I just can't watch him die. And I have to let him go. I have no choice. I just have no choice. And I hope he finds his way. But in the meanwhile, I have to focus back on my way. And my way is that I've got to stay sober. And how I do that is by, like when Sandy called and asked me to share tonight, my first reaction was no, because I knew that my ex-husband was coming by today to get his stuff. And I thought, God, I'm not going to want to go out after that. And it's like, no, maybe I need to go out after that. Because, you know, I had plans to sit home and feel sorry for myself. You know, and Sandy just went ahead and ruined all that by asking me to come out. I'm active in my program. I have an amazing, amazing support group. My sister and I, after years and years and years of struggling with our relationship, are now really close. She's my best friend, which if you hadn't, who knew? I mean, man, because the struggles we went through, me and her, were just amazing. And now we really are an important part of each other's support group. I work my steps. I did a step workshop not that long ago, which I really enjoyed. I have amazing women friends in my life that I talk to pretty well every day. I'm back in school. I may be a little too busy. I was talking to my sponsor about that. You know, maybe I'm keeping so busy so I don't have to feel some of this pain. I think I'm going to cut back my school next semester. I've also gone back to the gym. I've lost some weight, which I'm happy about. And I'm exercising regularly, which I'm happy about. Those endorphins are really neat things. I don't think they're illegal. I think I'm allowed those. And it's good for me. It's good for me. I think it's about time. I'm 43 years old, 16 years sober, and I've made this amazing revelation that it's time for me to learn how to take care of myself. And I know it ain't going to be easy, but I know that it's worthwhile. And again, if you would have told me 16 years ago that in 16 years you'd be going through a divorce and grateful that you have yourself, and you know who you are, and you're starting to love yourself, I would have told you to take a big flying off of a very tall building. But that's the truth. The truth is that I am grateful. I'm grateful I'm sober. I'm grateful I'm a member of Alcoholics Anonymous. I'm even grateful that I'm an alcoholic. Yes, I'm one of those annoying, grateful alcoholics. I used to hate those at the beginning, but that's what I am. I'm grateful to be still connected to this program and to not have drifted away and stayed away, because I know there are people that, once they're around for a while, stay away. I think I'd be batty as hell if I did that, so I stay to try and be a little bit less batty, and I still need you. And I wish you all contented, happy sobriety, and if troubles come your way, just remember that's life, and that, you know, I choose not to drink over those things today. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Sandy, for coming out and sharing with us this evening. I seem to be really good at ruining people's plans. Unintentionally, but that's fine. I have asked Karen to thank you on behalf of the group.
I was really glad to be asked to thank the speaker tonight. I've known Sandy and her sister for a really long time, and everybody's story is different, but I find the way Sandy talks about it, she really conveys for me the insanity and the progression of alcoholism in so many little snapshots where I can see myself. And how she came into AA, similarly, I came in with my mom, and she never called me an alcoholic either, God love her. And it was a good lesson, because now my kids are coming around, and I kind of know what to do and what not to. And today, the change is just amazing. Just amazing. The healing that's taken place. And I think that's been the greatest gift for me, too. I know myself today better than I used to. And I can look forward to more of that. And I get a good sense from that. So on behalf of myself and the group,